Good morning to you all, and welcome to the fifth lecture of the 2017 Palliative Care Lecture Series. Hospice New Zealand would like to thank you and acknowledge the Genesis Oncology Trust for their generous support and funding to deliver these free lectures. The lecture today will be recorded, and it will be available on the Hospice New Zealand website. Please be aware there will be an opportunity for questions at the end of the presentation. I would now like to introduce and hand over to our guest speaker today, Kat Chu. Kat Chu is a registered nurse in the community palliative care team at Mercy Hospice, Auckland. She has been working in nursing for over 25 years and originally trained in Hong Kong before migrating to New Zealand 16 years ago. Welcome, Kat Chu. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here today. My name is Catherine. Everyone's called me Kat in Auckland here. I'm one of the palliative care nurses in Mercy Hospice, Auckland. According to New Zealand Nursing Council, I'm international qualified nurse. I was a nurse from Hong Kong before my immigration. Within 16 years of my immigrant's life, I have been nursing in Mercy for almost 10 years now. Between 2009 to 2014, I previously worked as Chinese nurse liaison in Mercy Hospice. Next slide, please. This session does not present any research findings. In fact, I'm going to share my experience and reflections on Asian immigrants dying and growing old in this country. This comes from my perspective as a specialist palliative care nurse and as an Asian migrant living in central Auckland. The word Asian in itself covers a huge range of people. In my discussions here today, I focus mainly Asian who belong to the coal community. In New Zealand, this term coal community refers to culturally and linguistically diverse populations from Asian, Middle Eastern, Latin American, and African backgrounds. This session is not intended to generalize Asian experiences in this beautiful country. However, I hope to highlight specific challenges faced by the Asian people who have culture and language difference to the mainstream Kiwis. Hopefully, together, we will find opportunities to ensure an equal access to quality palliative care for all people in New Zealand. Slide 3, please. I really like this quote from Gandhi. I'm truly thankful to have numerous opportunities to learn and grow from nursing in New Zealand, particularly since I started in Mercy Hospice Auckland in 2007. I have developed both personally and professionally. Being a registered nurse from Hong Kong, I know healthcare culture in New Zealand is very different to my original home. I experienced this firsthand as a migrant. I have observed and reflect what has happened in the lives of Asian people around me. I'm excited to have this chance to be amongst you and share with you today. I believe you are all here at this time of the day because you care. We all want to deliver the best quality palliative care to every person regardless of their origins, belief, language, residential status, and religion. Caring for people from different cultures presents huge challenges, especially when they will not or they cannot communicate with us. Slide 4, please. So who is Asian? It is definitely not just Chinese. If you look up onto Google, Asian is a term referring to people who have ancestral origins in Asia. And Asia includes Central Asia, East Asia, North Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia, and West Asia. From the Statistics New Zealand, Asian is referred to people who self-identify with ethnicities associated with the vast geographic region of Asia. Therefore, the label Asian in New Zealand includes a wide range of ethnic groups such as Chinese, Filipino, Indian, Japanese, Korean, Southeast Asian, and so on. Next slide, please. To care for someone who has a culture different to your own, we need to be mindful of the subtle but significant cultural differences. To understand one's cultural identity, we can go by the census definition. And yet, the reality is that people of Asian ethnicities can and do identify with more than one ethnicity. It is because we do have Asians who were born overseas, whether they were born in Asian countries or in Europe, in the Americas, or in the Pacific. Therefore, health professionals should take a look from their angles, the way how they cook, the language they speak, the education opportunity they have, the histories they grow up with, and the experiences they had from the time when they are called migrants. Being a migrant myself, I certainly experienced cultural dilemmas and identity confusion for a wee while. It took me many years to accept there is no Hong Kongese, and I am a Hong Kong Chinese. Indeed, amongst Chinese, there are 56 ethnic groups that are officially recognized in China. Chinese in itself is a diverse ethnic group with huge differences across the same generations and transgenerations. For Asian people, although we look similar in your eyes, we see ourselves as a diverse group, and we are very different to others. Some Asian people do not like to be presumed as Chinese. Even some Hong Kong Chinese would not like to be greeted with Ni Hao, which is Mandarin language. And please remember, Asian languages are not interchangeable. Up till recently, lots of my Chinese peers were still being asked, "Can you speak Korean?" Excuse me. We don't speak Korean. Therefore, our eyes and our minds need to go beyond what we see when we look at the person. Importantly, as professionals working across culture, we need to develop an ability of readiness and willingness to clarify and respond to an individual's cultural needs. Next slide, please. So here are some facts about Asia in New Zealand. We know that early Indian migrants arrived around 1810 to 1815, and the first Chinese arrived in Nelson in 1842. Therefore, New Zealand Asian has established a long history in New Zealand. Between 1980 to 2000, due to a combination of the New Zealand immigration policy changes and the global events, New Zealand saw a huge influx of Asian immigrants around 2000. This group of migrants are commonly called the new immigrants. Within Asian migrants, those early settlers and the new immigrants present very different cultural behavior in my experience. Asian population are increasingly rapidly in the recent years, particularly in Auckland where I live. Importantly, we all know there was a noticeable growth of Asian across different cities, such as Invercargill, Southland, Queenstown, Bay of Plenty, Tauranga. It is important to note that from 2013 census, we know that Asian communities make up the largest part of overseas-born people in New Zealand. Although the number of Asian people keeps increasing, and Asian people might not be a minority group soon, depending on the degree of integration in the adopted new country and the migrant experiences, people of coal populations are still a vulnerable group in New Zealand. Next slide, please. In addition, I observe New Zealand has lots of mobile migrants, such as international students and astronaut families. they are living temporarily in New Zealand, but may not eventually settle down in the country. This high level of mobility between countries does impact on the degree of integration, such as affecting one's ability and willingness to learn a new language, to adopt new ways of living, to feel emotionally and socially connected, to feel satisfied with a medical treatment plan set out in New Zealand system. On the other side, with advanced technology and cheaper telecommunication costs, instant information exchange between two countries is very common. While this supports ongoing connection of people in both worlds, this facilitates people to compare services available and often raise unrealistic expectations. For example, some people might expect the possibility to pay for blood transfusion irrespective of the clinical condition, which can happen in the other country. Slide 8, please. From our experience, we know lots of Asian migrants do not speak any English. Some might be new migrants, but we definitely encounter lots of non-English-speaking Asian people who have been living in New Zealand for a period of time. From the statistics, it is important to note that over a quarter of people who identify with at least one Asian ethnicity reported they spoke English only. Next slide, please. So what if you are caring for an Asian person who focuses heavily on the traditional values, but his younger generation do not understand him? The implication here for us will be how many of these people are living under the same roof, with more older Asian migrants reunited with their children in our country. I meet more and more elderly who are isolated, alone, and lonely, who cannot communicate with their own grandchildren due to linguistic barriers and transgenerational gaps. What kind of experiences are for these co-grandparents if they are old and frail? Next slide, please. Here I'm going to introduce you about Nicholas. Nicholas, he's 78 years of age when I met him. He got a cancer diagnosis. He was a migrant over 20 years. He was living with his wife, a daughter and a son. He was a farmer back in China. When he came to this country, he worked as a laborer. So many years ago, I came across Nicholas and his family. Nicholas' family were very caring. It was such a lovely experience to care for him and his family. My team and I cared for him at home for some time, and he was admitted to Mercy Inpatient Unit eventually for his final days. Nicholas and I knew each other for some time, and during my visit, we would have conversation on subjects of Chinese literature and teachings from Confucius. I have been lucky to grow up with some proper traditional teaching. I learned a little bit of Chinese literature in school, and I practiced Chinese traditional values passed on from parents and elders when I was younger. During Nicholas' stay in the inpatient unit, he became very concerned that he hadn't properly and formally taught his children over Chinese teachings. He was very proud of his two children, and they were absolutely brilliant example of the younger generation. They appeared to be hardworking, achieved well in their career. They were polite and respectful to others and their parents. However, Nicholas' regret was that he never got around to sit down to teach them Chinese traditional values properly, as his children need to do well in this English-speaking world. So, for Nicholas, the ability to pass on his values and establish these transgenerational bonds was significant in his final days. A few days before his death, he requested me to be involved when he gave his last teaching session to his daughter. I helped his daughter to make sense of some Chinese, complex Chinese works and the hidden meanings of the Chinese teachings. It was a powerful, meaningful dignity care session that I learned from caring Nicholas, and I am forever grateful for that experience. Next slide, please. Whenever I care for my patients and their families who are Asian migrants, I do not label, but definitely I am mindful of what are their lives before this illness. What are their lives now? What does it mean to have an illness at this time in a foreign land? Before our first encounter, how they view and make care choices are shaped by their previous experiences in society and health system. I think New Zealand is a beautiful country, and I call New Zealand is my home. Unfortunately, we do have silent racism within some people's minds. Around the same time of the Matt Bridges Waiheke row earlier in this year, I was unfortunate to experience racist comments myself. Coincidentally, it happened to me at the same Waiheke vineyard. A European woman walked past the cashier and made a loud remark about an Asian woman jumped the queue to get the table. With the negative and attention-seeking remark, I didn't see that European woman dealt with whoever jumped the queue. And to date, I still find that experience disturbing. On the other side, with one's own cultural world, Asian people continue to face challenges in maintaining a traditional presence across generations, such as traditional filial practice within Asian communities means holistic care for elders. However, along with modernization and migration, this traditional virtue is rapidly changing over recent decades. Migrants, elders' care, and welfare needs are not necessarily supported through traditional family structures and cultural practice. This certainly has a significant implication to care planning when elders are non-English speaking. Next slide, please. The second story here is about Mrs. Lee. Mrs. Lee, she is 70 years old of age with a cancer diagnosed in homeland before she returned to New Zealand for care. In New Zealand, she lives with her son and his wife and a teenage daughter. Mrs. Lee, she did have a daughter who is very caring back home in China. Mrs. Lee was a retired medical administrator. She doesn't speak English and she has no social network in New Zealand. When I first met her, she was quite frail with high fall risk, but she only had mild symptoms. After my initial visit to Mrs. Lee at her private residence, as I was walking down the driveway of this beautiful home in central Auckland, her son followed me and asked, "Why can't the hospital keep my mother there? I would pay any cost to care for her." Mrs. Lee's son was desperate. He was clearly frustrated and concerned that he could not find any help to give his mom the best care, even with his willingness to pay. He didn't understand the healthcare system here, and he didn't seem to be getting sufficient advice about these concerns from his GP or acute hospital. It was very clear that Mrs. Lee wanted to stay with her son, and therefore she gave up being cared for by her dedicated daughter in China. Luckily for us, Mrs. Lee was able and willing to communicate. While she would rather want to stay at home for her end of life, She was aware of it would not happen due to family dynamics and different community support in New Zealand. A residential aged care facility was her final care place, and her family was very grateful with the staff's excellent cross-cultural care. On reflection, we can see that Mrs. Lee's family needs lots of advice. We wouldn't know whether they were not forthcoming or they didn't know what to ask prior to meeting our team. Working alongside Asian migrants, it is worthwhile to proactively clarify their needs and give them advice in a culturally appropriate way. I do feel fortunate that due to our similar culture, I was able to help Mrs. Lee and her family. Even I couldn't hear her dialect very well, her family was very willing to translate for me. They were very open to share their frustrations and their concerns with me. Next slide, please. To us in New Zealand, the approach of palliative care is difficult to explain. In today's death denial world, the term hospice and palliative care do carry stigma. In Asian countries, palliative care development is patchy across different countries or regions. Even in some Asian regions where they will report to have comprehensive palliative care activities, people in general will not discuss any subject related to hospice or palliative care. For example, in Hong Kong, where I come from, the first hospice was established in 1982. It was reported Hong Kong Hospice Palliative Care Service are at a stage of advanced integration into mainstream service provision. But I can assure you that most Hong Kong people will not have a clue what palliative care is. In addition, in China, Taiwan and Hong Kong, hospice and palliative care were translated into different Chinese terms. Therefore, for most Chinese migrants who received palliative care services from hospices, they either totally didn't know what is palliative care is about, or their first impression would be they were given up by the healthcare system and they have been given the death sentence. Even amongst Asian health professionals in New Zealand, palliative care is an unfamiliar word, which some might find uncomfortable to discuss. If we seriously want to improve palliative care services for Asian people in this country, we need to actively engage with Asian health workers, such as general practitioner, practice nurse, ethnic social workers. We need to demystify palliative care and improve whole population's understanding of palliative care service by focusing on education and support of the cultural health professionals. Next slide, please. To me, the essence of palliative care is helping a person to live and die with dignity. We need to be able to understand individual perceptions and attitudes to pain or symptom management, their interpretations of suffering and spirituality concern. We need to be able to facilitate meaningful dialogue between patients and the carers, especially for those who are not strong in articulating emotions and intimacy. Asian is a very diverse ethnic group. Therefore, we cannot generalize the needs of Asian population as a whole. Moreover, contemporary Asians are less likely to adhere to a traditional way of living or dying. We are caring for multi-generational people, and they do not necessarily understand each other, even within a family. I put these pictures on the slide to remind me how many Chinese patients use non-prescribed portable oxygen concentrators in Auckland. To their family, family were trying to do the last bit of support and caring, where they learn from media and they can easily buy from their homeland. Next slide, please. Our patients do not require us to keep reminding them of their ultimate demise. They need us to tune in their needs, to use more gentle language, to facilitate them making sense of present and future, and perhaps to offer more options in supporting them to live well. My final story is about Mr. Chen. I met him last year, and I would describe he was in his early palliative care journey. He was 60 years old of age, with a recent diagnosis of terminal cancer. He was waiting for his first appointment for discussion of palliative care chemotherapy. He lived in a city apartment alone, while he has a son, but he lives on the other side of Auckland and always worked out of Auckland. Mr. Chen has a wife and a daughter still in China. The reason Mr. Chen stayed in the country, he was hopeful to get his permanent residence, and he does not speak English. On the first assessment, we identify huge symptom issues of Mr. Chen, such as ongoing nausea, vomiting, constipation, and discomfort. We further find out that he had poor appetite and poor nutritional intake. After a couple more visits, he started to share with me that he would possibly be better off with home cooking from his wife and daughter. He perhaps will have more chances to see understanding of his illness and discuss his plan with the doctor back home. At the same time, I have concern over his ability to call help in case of acute events. I understood that he was not able to communicate with emergency staff on 111 call because of his language barrier. And he lived in the type of apartment which required either a visitor know the password or someone has to open the main entrance door. So there were clearly access issues in case he was very unwell and needed help. So when I asked him, what would you do if you become very unwell? He told me he planned to stand in the middle of the main street in order to seek help from the foreign students. Finally, I decided to have a conversation with him about hope. It is more important to get your permanent residence, which might come in months, or it is more important you can ask your Chinese doctor's question in your language. He could possibly get better care and appropriate nutrition from his family in order to make his body stronger. I was not there to see an answer, and I certainly didn't have answer for him. We share understanding because we share similar food culture, family values, and belief in traditional Chinese medicine. And we knew the challenges of living in New Zealand as a migrant. Not long after the conversation, Mr. Chen returned to China without his permanent residence. Next slide, please. In my experience, it takes commitment of an individual and an organization together for making a successful and a sustainable change. In order to improve delivery of quality palliative care for core populations, practitioners need to develop cultural humility in their practice. An organization may want to examine how a cultural liaison role would be able to add values into existing multidisciplinary expertise. And don't delay any longer. We need to actively engage with core community groups and introduce the concept of palliative care approach to them. Next slide, please. We have done so well and so long on cultural competency and cultural appropriate care. Recently, I learned this concept of cultural humility care from one of the palliative care medical colleagues, Oleg, in an advanced care planning session last year. Essentially, cultural humility incorporates a consistent commitment to learning and reflection, but also an understanding of power dynamics and one's own role in society. In our work caring for co-populations at their most vulnerable times, we need to have an ability to acknowledge cultural differences and to see understanding of their needs willingly, to be culturally competent in practice, and to offer culturally responsive care. In New Zealand, we have been fortunate to have a great cultural competency resource and training package via the eCOV website. You can feel free to check the website to find out whether you are eligible for the funded course. Next slide, please. The concept of a cultural broker or liaison is not new in New Zealand. It is commonly found in services support Pacific and Maori people. Importantly, core populations need to learn and understand the healthcare culture of a new adopted home. At the same time, the healthcare team can benefit from the liaison person to move forward gently and safely when caring for core populations. In my opinion, an effective cultural broker is someone who has cultural knowledge, understanding of nuances and professional boundaries, who is good at communication skills and can express empathy. And this person is able to navigate, mediate, advocate, liaise, and be a catalyst for change. Next slide, please. Each region of our country has different local coal communities. No matter the size of the coal population in your area, we need to explore ways to engage with them, to listen to their needs, and establish a platform for promoting a palliative care approach. Coal communities include healthcare practitioners, community groups, church and faith groups, and interpreters. Just like any English-speaking person, not all medical persons and interpreters fully understand and embrace the holistic approach of palliative care. We cannot make presumptions of their understanding or establish if there is bias. These quotes are my first-hand quotes that I hear directly from the people I meet. And in fact, that was quite disappointing when I hear directly from a Chinese doctor say it to my face about a patient that might need his care with more conversation and discussion. And he literally just said to me, "What do you expect me to do? He's already a palliative care patient." And of course, we know there could be a lot to do. And also from a Chinese who was Kiwi born and has been lived in this country for around 80 years. And when a lot of people presumed that she was very Kiwi, and the last thing I remember what she said to me is, "The doctor should not tell me that I'm dying in a month. I'm still a Chinese, you know?" Next slide, please. So in summary, I think I would just want to highlight again, the Asian population in New Zealand is not a homogeneous group. Every individual has their own personal values and perspectives of death and dying, and this includes ethnic staff. Transcultural care is not limited to spoken language. Holistic care should consider the views and experiences of core populations. Quality palliative care is built on a genuine, individualized care intervention. Next slide, please. Finally, I hope you will find this morning's session helpful. I am fortunate to have this special experience as a migrant and palliative care nurse in this beautiful New Zealand. My experiences and observations have helped improve my practice. Particularly, I would like to thank my wider team in Mercy Hospice Auckland, those teachers who were still working here, and those who have already finished work with Mercy. You all have given me so much chances to learn. Thank you so much.